very much. It's a great honor and pleasure to be here, and it's terrific to see so many friends and colleagues. So I'd like to give a New York City spin on what we just heard, and that's to start with this image that tries to compare a place that we all know as it looked like 400 years ago with a place we all know as it looks like today. This is Manhattan, or Manhattan as we call it. And what I'd like to say to you is in New York City, there's a different way about thinking what's possible. And I think it has several components. One of the components is about ambition. You know, J.P. Morgan or Robert Moses or Mayor Bloomberg, for that matter, don't look at a problem and think, oh, what are all the constraints and how can we fit in our thing within the constraints? They think about how do we change the system to make it work to yield our ambition, to yield our values. And those values come not just from science. In fact, I would say science is only a very small piece of them. They come also from art and from communication and for our morals and our values. That is a larger conversation than we can have just in this room. And I think a lot of the context for Jamaica Bay needs to extend beyond the scientific community and out into the wider world. And I'll try and say a little bit about how we're doing that. And then the third thing I'd like to say is, just as a way of introduction, is about history, right? So, you know, there's a history department, I'm sure, at Brooklyn College, and all those people don't say the reason we study the Civil War or the reason we study 14th century France is because we want to go back to 14th century France or because we want to refight the Civil War. They talk about those things because we learn something from history. We learn about why people make the decisions they do. They learn about the consequences of their decisions, and they learn how not to make the same mistakes going forward. And so I think that's what we learn from history. We learn the possibilities that might not be here today. The timeline only goes forward. No timeline goes backward except in the science fiction movies. All timelines go forward. We're here today. The question is, what do we want for tomorrow? And I think what we want for tomorrow has to do with ecology. And it's easy, as in the last picture of the last speaker, or in this picture, to think about ecology and how it affects on a place. What's interesting is this is a picture of Murray Hill and where the United Nations is today, at Turtle Bay, right? And it's easy for us to imagine the 15 ecosystems and the way that carbon and water are cycling through those salt marshes that we see that come down there. There are constraints for sure, but we don't even know what the kind of constraints are about how we build our city and how we build ecology into our worldview. Ecology says things about scale, so we can fly above Manhattan as it was 400 years ago, and we can see it as a place that's in an estuary context, it has a relationship to the ocean, it has a relationship to a climate that's continental and global in scale, and that's all those things are exactly true. They're still true for New York City, and they're still true for Jamaica Bay. We can even imagine Henry Hudson, right, who came to this part of the world as on an accident, on a whim. He was trying to get to China. He didn't care at all about New York or what he was seeing. And what he wanted to do was become wealthy. And yet what he didn't realize is the wealth of what was right in front of him. That sort of wealth of interactions that makes nature strong and resilient. In fact, something that we can agree on for Jamaica Bay, for New York City, for our world, is that we're all looking for sustainability. We're looking for a way to make it last, where our generation isn't taking more so that the next generation has less. And yet, when we look at a particular place, particularly when we look at a highly urbanized place, what is the example of sustainability? Does it mean a no net carbon loss building, right? You know, that's the way architects are trying to think about it. Does it mean a site has to catch all of its water? Well, that's not the way ecosystems work. Some parts of ecosystems catch water and some pass them to other parts of the ecosystem. Some create carbon and others sequester it in. So as we think about Jamaica Bay and we think about New York City, we need to be thinking about it in an ecological context. It's not just about saying no, but it's actually about saying yes and actually making the whole system work. And so let me talk a little bit about what we're trying to do through this Wailikia project. So these are places in New York City. And these are places in New York City. The question is, how do we put them together? So, and we call this project Wailikia, which means my good home. And it's about the past ecology and the current ecology and the future ecology of New York City, of all of New York City, of the Bronx and Brooklyn and of Queens and of Staten Island and as the seascape in between. So say with me, Wailikia. It's okay, you can say it. Wikileaks. It's a little bit hard to say. You need to practice. If you don't say it 5 or 6 times, you won't remember it. You'll think it's WikiLeaks, or you'll think it's something else. What is that funny project he's working on? You know, with Manhattan, we had a great example because Manhattan became Manhattan, so it sort of sticks in your mind. But there isn't a Brooklyn-ahada, right? And there isn't a Bronx-ahada. So we needed another name, and this is what a Lenape person, like that fellow there, would say to you when you come to his wigwam. He says, welcome, Wiglikia, welcome to my good home. And that's the way we need to be thinking about New York City, is my good home that's going to last for 400 years, right? That's going to last for a long term. And I think this is a particularly important perspective when we think about, you know, highly modified systems like Jamaica Bay. So it means my good home. So what we're trying to do is take what we learned from Manhattan and apply it to the rest of the city. So Wiglikia Bronx and Wiglikia Brooklyn, which will include with Queens, Jamaica Bay, Wiglikia Queens, Wiglikia Staten Island, and of course Wiglikia Manhattan, right? My good home, Manhattan. Which we can see as Henry Hudson might have seen it, right? And the point of this again, to imagine that moment in time is to give inspiration, is to give depth, is to create ecological context around our restoration efforts. And that's true not just in our parks and in places a little bit of green, but it's also true on the Belt Parkway. And it's also true on Flatbush Avenue. And it's also true on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan or on City Island Avenue where I live up in the Bronx, that we need to think about every place we live as an ecological place and ourselves as participants in the ecology of our place. It's tailored to the specific geography and climate of our little part of heaven, of our little part of the earth. So the goals of the Wiglikia project. So to describe the ecology of all the boroughs in New York City and the surrounding seascape at a time immediately before European contact. To compare that historical ecology to the ecology that we have today on a kind of a block-by-block basis, to give very specific advice about what we're missing, what we have more of, and what we don't know about. And then provide that information as a way of, as a contribution, in addition to the contributions you're all making to the conservation, restoration, and reimagining of nature in New York City. So we do this work by starting from historical maps, which New York City has a rich treasure trove of, and they tell us a lot about what the original shoreline and beaches and wetlands and topography and hydrology of the city was. And then we georeference them so that we can then compare them to the city streets and to the city buildings, and so that we can see it within the block-by-block geography that everybody in the city knows. And we're trying to do that now for the rest of the city. And if you know anything about Manhattan, you know that a part of it was that British headquarters map, which I just showed you, that showed us all of Manhattan and very early in time and very, very well mapped. And that was a tremendous resource, and it's something we don't have for the rest of the city. There's no one map of Jamaica Bay or of Queens or of Brooklyn or Staten Island. There's actually hundreds of maps. The coastal surveys are really lovely and very helpful. This is Hassler, 1844, which many of you know. It was followed by subsequent coastal surveys, 1866, and a whole variety of other maps. And each of these maps is, you know, mapped for its own reason, mostly not having to do about ecosystems or ecosystem restoration at different scales and with different purposes. And they show, particularly for a system like Jamaica Bay, the kind of change that the professor was just discussing. And so one of our challenges is how to learn across these maps and synthesize a perspective that won't ever be God's own perspective on what Jamaica Bay was like 400 years ago, but in fact is our best guess of what its ecosystem orientation and structure and function was 400 years ago. And we do that by building up the landscape, by typical sort of landscape ecology techniques that are taking advantage of the waters and the soils and the topography in such a way that we can build up the sort of physical stage of the landscape and then interact it with disturbance, because we know this is what creates ecosystems. I'm just going to keep pushing buttons. And these ecosystems then create the habitats that make it possible for the amazing wildlife of this part of the world. And one of the things we learned through Manhattan is that there were, for example, 55 different ecosystem types just on Manhattan Island. And we expect we can expand that list by 10 or 15 types by the time we're done with the rest of the city. And that those habitat types, of which here are some more pictures, provided all kinds of habitat for a whole suite of species, some of which we still have, and they're scarce, some of which we still have, and they're really abundant, some of which are completely gone that could come back, and some of which that are gone and probably aren't going to come back anytime soon. But I'm not going to tell you what is possible and what's not possible about the future, because that is a non-New York City way of thinking about the world. You know, the city is all about creating new futures and about creating new ideas for how to live in the world. And so the ideas that we build around Jamaica Bay are the ideas that can then take out and swallow and grow across the world. And one of those ideas is thinking about networks, thinking about the complicated and strongly connected habitats of Manahata. This is the mirror web of Manahata, and we're going to produce something similar for Jamaica Bay over the coming years that allows us actually to see the relationship between all the plants and animals and the non-living parts of the environment. Each little dot on this map represents a different plant or animal or stream type or soil type, and each gray line is a different habitat connection. And what you see in this diagram is that sort of ball in the middle are the terrestrial parts of the landscape, and that cluster on the left side, that's the aquatic species, and that other cluster up on the right, that's the marine species. And you can see that they all form their own compartments and yet have connections in between them. And that's why we can't think of just Jamaica Bay as the wetlands of Jamaica Bay or the estuary of Jamaica Bay. We have to necessarily think about its relationship to the uplands that are associated with it. And those uplands at a variety of scales, right? From the close to the individual islands, to the estuary itself, to the moraine, to the entire region. And I'll just point out that one of those little dots on that diagram is human beings, right? We're a very important dot, and there are a strong set of connections that connect us to all the other ones, but we're just one little dot. And I think if you imagine the mirror web that exists today in the city, it would be just as complicated, perhaps more so. And that entire complicated interaction of our social and economic and personal relationships is all contained within that one little dot in this much larger network. So we take these techniques, and they allow us to see where the streams were and where the soils were and how high the water was in the past, to fill in the map of the different ecosystem types, to understand its landscape ecology, and then to place into those maps of the different plants and animals that once lived in our city, including people. And this information then can inform these reports, and I have a hard time keeping up with all the reports and all the plans that we're writing to make nature work in the city, and so I apologize if your particular report isn't shown on this slide. But I think these are the ways that the city does its work, right? And they're very specific, and they're very, controlled, and they have lots of points, and they have lots of metrics, and I completely applaud all of those things. But we also need to give those a sense of vision and a sense of ambition and a pushing forward. We'll hear for the rest of the day about all the problems, but I hope you keep in the mind the idea of what's possible and what we can push forward to. And I think we need to talk to the public about that. So we built this website about Manahata, and we're expanding it to cover the rest of the city, where you can zoom in on any block and get a list of all the plants and animals that were once in that block as a way of understanding what biodiversity means in your particular place, in your particular context. And over the summer, we were funded actually to build a website to help people imagine the future of their block, where they can zoom in to any block in the city, starting with Manhattan, but eventually for the rest of the city, for the rest of Wallachia, and see how carbon and water and biodiversity moved to that block 400 years ago, see how carbon and water and biodiversity moved to that block today, and then redesign their block, build bigger buildings if they want, or erase away the buildings, or add streams, or put in streetcars, or put in a limited access highway if that's what they want, and then see what the water and carbon and biodiversity consequences of their changes would be in real time, and then share their visions, share their ideas for their block and their neighborhoods and their city with each other and with the people that are helping us create the city and the city government and the various state and federal agencies. So that when we come to see this idea, see this vision, see this landscape, we think not just about what it is, but we think about what it can possibly be. Thank you very much.